When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's going on, Giants fans? Welcome to the latest episode of our Talk is Cheap podcast from NJ Advanced Media, The Star Ledger, and NJ.com. Daryl Slater here with Bob Brookover. It's Tuesday evening right now, and a lot to digest. We're not going to talk a lot about the Jets, but the last 2 days at MetLife Stadium, just completely almost unfathomable things happening. Obviously, everyone knows the Giants losing 40-0 to the Cowboys on Sunday night. And about 24 hours later, the Jets put together like one of the craziest games in the history of their franchise, and they have plenty of those and plenty of insane things that have happened to them. Everyone knows by now Aaron Rodgers out for the year with a torn Achilles tendon, 4 snaps into his Jets career, and then the Jets defense puts on a show, and they win on a punt return in overtime from an undrafted rookie, Xavier Gibson. And so I covered both those games, and I'm completely fried right now just from the late nights and just everything that happened. It was just so much to take in. And again, we don't need to talk too much about the Rodgers stuff. We can mention one kind of tie into the Giants that I'll get to, but Bob, how you doing? And are you caught up on some sleep from Sunday night yet?
No, I only covered one of the two games, and I'm completely fried. But I'm almost twice as old as you, so that would explain that. But no, I'm actually feeling pretty good.
You're not 82 years old, Bob.
I enjoyed watching the Jets game from my couch, and it was a wild game to watch. Much more entertaining than the game I'd seen the night before at MetLife, or should we now call it Jet Life?
That's certainly Aaron Rodgers attempted to coin that. And this now that, you know, that October 29th Jet Giant game, which had so much juice, obviously it's still big for both of these teams. You know, neither team's season is sunk, even though the Giants are 0-1 and the Jets don't have their quarterback. They do have a great defense. So at that point, that's the seventh game of the season for the Jets, because they have a bye week. It's the eighth for the Giants.
The great question right now is, who would you rather be?
Yeah, I still think I think the Giants for sure, because they still have everything intact. But, would you agree?
Yeah, I'd rather have the Jets defense. But yes, when you lose your quarterback, I'd rather have my starting quarterback, yes, anytime.
Their defense is absolutely nasty, and that's going to maybe keep them afloat. Now, maybe not the whole season, but I think there's a possibility that Jet-Giant game is going to still be relevant. I mean, now the Jets have an absolute gauntlet coming up here. They got to play the Chiefs and the Eagles, not in this order, obviously. And then they have the Cowboys next week in Dallas, who just shredded the Giants. And, so we'll see. We'll talk, that we got plenty of time down the road to talk Jet-Giant game, even with a little bit of luster off the game with Aaron Rodgers out for the year. I will say this, the Jets are looking for quarterbacks. Like, they're going to bring someone in, right? It's not going to be Tyrod Taylor, but Tyrod Taylor is a free agent after this year. Next year, if say Rodgers can't come back, he doesn't come back, what do they do? Do they go to the stopgap route? If they do, a little bit of a Giant tie in there. Maybe they go with the stopgap route with Tyrod Taylor. There's plenty of other options, but it's just one name to throw out there of a guy that they could maybe sign next year if Zach Wilson's a total disaster. And the other if is if Aaron Rodgers doesn't want to do it anymore. We'll see.
Yeah, there's plenty of time to sort that out, but it was just an amazing thing to watch. I was sitting on the couch watching it with my wife, and she's like, oh no. And she's not even a Jets fan, but you're like, no, that can't be really happening. That didn't just happen.
It's almost one of those things that you can't even make up. Like, even in your worst nightmare as a Jet fan, and you're the most pessimistic Jet fan.
I kind of felt the way the night before too, as I watched that Giants game unfold in the first 10 minutes, you're like, okay, that was a great drive that ended with a touchdown for the other team. Okay, that they got the ball back and they popped it out for a fumble, Saquon Barkley, or interception, it was ruled eventually, whatever it was, for a touchdown. That didn't just happen. Then the Giants got the ball back and Daniel Jones throws an interception and there's another touchdown. It becomes another touchdown. I can't believe what I'm watching. This trumped that.
It did. I mean, the Giants getting pounded and the Cowboys winning like they did is the biggest story in sports in America for a day, and then it became Rodgers. So that stadium saw some insane stuff, tons of it, from the broad to the more micro stuff, as you alluded to all those plays. And maybe the Xavier Gibson thing will become a footnote in history, but certainly an insane way to end that game. I think it was like the third time ever a game had ended with a punt return touchdown in overtime like that, walk off in overtime. So, just switching gears totally now to the Giants, let's contextualize this. It was the Giants' worst home loss since 1943. World War II was still going on. Most people know that World War II is still going on in 43.
You pointed out Wellington Mara was fighting in it.
He did fight in World War II. I'm not sure if he was over there at that time. He was 27 years old. John Mara, I think, was 11 years away from being born. So the worst Giants home loss in 80 years, 40-0. Their worst regular season loss since 1973 to the Raiders. I think that was a 42-0 or something like that. And then their worst overall loss since 1993, the playoff loss, 44-3.
Their worst loss ever in New Jersey.
Yeah, very true, because those latter two games I referred to, of course, were Raiders in the road, Niners at Candlestick in 93 in the divisional round of the playoffs, 44-3 a lot. You know, Giant fans remember that one. And the 1943 game was at the Polo Grounds.
The other New York Giants were still playing there.
Yeah, so that just goes to show you how uncommon this was. It's the second biggest margin in the Cowboys-Giants series ever, at 123 games, including one in the playoffs. So 123 games now. There's one from the 66, I think it was 52-7, that the Cowboys won. But the biggest margin for either team, not just the Cowboys. So
I also went back and looked at Brian Daboll's lifetime as a coach, which started in 1997 as a graduate assistant at William & Mary. And he had, and then I also looked at his time as a player. I believe it went to Rochester, right? Yes.
That's
and he had never lost, or he had only one loss in his entire career was worse than that one. And that was his, oddly enough, it was his first game as offense coordinator with the Bills. So he lost 47-3 at Baltimore.
Crazy. So it hasn't been that long, but it's very rare. It's very rare, no matter how you slice it, for an NFL team to lose a game 40-0. It just doesn't happen. The game clearly got away from the Giants, and we can get into all the reasons why and how they go about, more importantly, fixing these things. I think, to me, we just have to start, because this affects everything going forward here now. We'll start up front. The Giants line, now granted, obviously, they had to throw the ball to come back, but they just got destroyed. The Giants now in the last three games, a great stat you dug up. They've been out-sacked 15-0 by the Cowboys. Of course, all those games are losses. We all know the stat now. Giants 1-12 against the Cowboys. The Cowboys and Eagles continue to own the Giants. I mean, I don't know if there's much else to say about that, other than that, to me, the gap is still really large. And that gap coming up, another matchup against Cowboys, two against Eagles, the Giants' offensive line, they got to figure out a way to contend with these two really awesome defensive fronts and other awesome defensive fronts, including the Niners.
Absolutely. If they don't, it's not like this wasn't known. I mean, the greatest fear, at least in my mind, going into this season was, is the offensive line good enough to make give Daniel Jones time to get to the weapons that he's added? And it wasn't in the opener. It wasn't even close to good enough. I mean, there wasn't anybody that played well, and that includes Andrew Thomas, who we'll get to more about, I'm sure, in a little bit because of his hamstring injury.
Yeah, so just how poorly did the Giants' offensive line play, you ask, right? We know however many sacks that they gave up. Pulling up the Pro Football Focus.
Team pressures, go ahead, dude.
Yeah, so there we go, pass blocking. The Giants allowed 27 pressures in that game. And in terms of the biggest culprits, Mark Lewinsky allowed 9 pressures. Evan Neal allowed 8. Andrew Thomas allowed 3. John Michael Schmitz 3. Ben Bredesen 2. So, and then Darren Waller 1. Daniel Bellinger 1. So Glowinski and Neal were an absolute disaster. Disaster. Glowinski had a 1.0 pass blocking grade from PFF. Neal 25.7. He picked up right where he left off last year and just being bad in pass blocking. I mean, this is not sustainable to have the right side of your line give up 17 pressures, and both of those guys pass blocked for 49 pass blocking snaps. So you're talking about one guy went 9 of 49, the other 8 of 49 in terms of how often they're giving up pressures. Not sustainable.
Well, and we've also given up. We now have the first Blutarski Award, which went to Glowinski, who got the PFF grade of 1.0. Not quite as good as John Belushi's Animal House classic character, who, as we all know, received a 0.0.
We knew that the line was going to be a question. And now going forward, I mean, John Michael Schmitz had some issues with the snap. He's a rookie. He's going to have issues. We knew the interior line was going to be a question, not just because of Schmitz, but because of the guards. There was a reason, clearly, that Glowinski was fighting for his job in training camp. Josh Azudu, they drafted him in the third round last year, and he's not able to start over Bredesen or, like, quite frankly, Glowinski, right? I mean, I think that why wouldn't they play him at right guard if they think he's their best right guard?
He didn't really run much at right guard. I mean, whenever they did the right guard, left guard thing, it was always
Bredesen. True. Yeah.
Going to right, and even last year he only played left guard, and it seemed I went back today and like was looking at his, which I'll get to more in a minute, but looked at his college career, and even then it seemed like he was always on the left side.
And of course, if he was good enough to be starting right now, and it's got to be disappointing that he's not, even though it doesn't doom his career, he would be the left guard and Bredesen would be the right guard. So they believe in Bredesen enough to start, they believe in Glowinski enough to start. They clearly believe those are the two best guards, and I think that's an indictment currently on Josh Azudu, who he played 12 snaps. He was okay. Mop-up duty. Can't read too much into it. But, I mean, the line is a disaster right now.
Yeah, it really is. And then we might as well get into this right now. It's a great segue to that. And now you got Andrew Thomas, questionable, who's your best offensive lineman, maybe your best offensive player. Certainly from a status of being a second team all pro last year, was the only guy on the all pro team from the Giants. Now he's got a hamstring issue that could keep him out of Sunday's game against the Cardinals. The guy who replaced him has also got an undisclosed injury, Matt Parrott. And, and after that, if you look at their depth chart, they don't even have a third guy listed. Marcus McKeithen's listed as the third offensive tackle at right tackle. But when Parrott went down on Sunday, they went to Josh Azudu as a third left tackle. It's a real problem if Andrew Thomas can't play Sunday.
It's dire. I mean, honestly, it doesn't look like he can play. There's a report from ESPN that it's not a serious injury, but he could miss some time. And we know how this goes. Things get reported as not a serious hamstring injury, guys out a month, because these are lingering issues. And you get it. Like, it's not a judgment against the player. It's a really hard injury to play with when you have to push off all the time.
Yep. Absolutely. And he did play with it. I mean, who knows if he made it worse by playing. He played, I think he had played 11 snaps at the point he did it. And then he played, he ended up playing 53 snaps in the game. So he came out in the fourth quarter, but, he played with it for a long time. So that's the story of the week for sure.
So they have to play a Cardinal team on Sunday. You had a stat earlier. We were talking about how well they didn't beat the Commanders, right? But they did a pretty good job pressure-wise.
They sacked Sam Howell 6 times. So, that's pretty good. Cowboys got to Daniel Jones 7. The Cardinals obviously aren't a great team, especially without Kyler Murray ready to play yet. But, there's no team in this league that's a pushover. And the Cardinals were ahead in that game a long time before some bad turnovers late. So they, you know, it's not like they're going there and it's going to be, Cardinals are going to say, oh, yes, you're the Giants. You made the playoffs last year. Please come beat us. You know, it's their home opener, so they're going to be motivated.
Yeah, and the Giants have a short week game at San Francisco after that. Of course, Nick Bosa is just insanely good, and that could just be a big-time problem if Andrew Thomas cannot play in either of those games. I mean, if he doesn't play in Arizona, like, there's pretty much no way he's going to be playing in San Francisco. I think it's –
you wouldn't think, yeah.
So that you could rule him out for really two games, and now the Giants have – if you go from the time of Sunday night's opener on the 10th of September to their game against Seattle in week four on a Monday night, that's October the 2nd, that's 3 weeks and a day. So that's a pretty decent recovery period if he can maybe come back for that. But by that point, I mean, the Giants are probably perhaps looking at 1-2. I mean, the nightmare is 0-3 and losing to one of the worst teams in the league and the Cardinals. But losing your left tackle opens the door for that nightmare possibility.
It sure does. It's a player you don't, you know, if you made a list of players you didn't want to lose, he'd easily be in the top five, probably the top three.
And, you know, I mean, the Giants defense should be able to perform well against the Joshua Dobbs-led Cardinal offense. Now, granted, the Cowboys scored short fields, they had a defensive touchdown, they had a special teams touchdown. And so the Giants in that game, I would love to know the last – so a team, they lost 40 to nothing, right? The team gave up 40 points. The defense did not give up all of those points. Right. I want to say the Giants allowed, and I'm going to look it up in terms of the yards they allowed. Now, you're not going to take solace in this because it's a 40-0 loss. They allowed 265 yards. And at a certain point, the Cowboys were not trying to move the ball anymore. But the Giant defense did not – they were not great, certainly by any stretch.
They got off easy, really, because so many things went wrong. They really got off easy. Tony Pollard only carried 14 times, but he ran for 70 yards, 5 yards a pop.
Not great.
You know – the as a team they had 4.1 they ran 4.1 yards a pop. You know, Dak Prescott really didn't need to do anything spectacular and did not. It was 13 for 24 for 143. You know, but they didn't really have to go to their passing game. I mean, when you look at it, so you've got a blocked field goal for a touchdown, an interception for a touchdown, and then another interception that results in a touchdown. Those are three plays right there. You give up 20 points. You don't give yourself a fighting chance when you do that. So if you're the Giants and you can eliminate those three things, which you're obviously not going to face every week, you're going to have a much better chance of being in games. That said, you know, the defense, you know, you go look at the Cowboys' first offensive series. It ended in a field goal, I believe. It ended in a field goal, but they went down the field and got to the Giants too before, you know. So that was a point in the game where you kind of needed your defense to say, hey, you know, we're a mess right now in several ways, but we're going to at least stand up and show you that, you know, we are here and we can do some things to affect this game too. And they didn't do that. They gave up, I think they gave up touchdowns on each of their first two drives. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. Let's see. So, yeah.
They gave up points on both of them. They gave up two field goals on both first two times they were on the field.
Yep, that's right.
And then a touchdown on a short field after the interception. So.
Yep, and that was it. I mean, that was the game. Daniel Jones threw a terrible interception. I mean, granted, it was a great play by Stephon Gilmore to scoop it off the turf. And that sealed the game. I mean, we don't need to get too much into the weeds of the game, but I mean, just we kind of covered all of the insane things that happened. The skip snap, even Andrew Thomas had the false start, although that led to the blocked field goal. It was like a yakety sacks Benny Hill just chain of events. And you look up the, you know, people know that song. They play this way against the Cardinals. They're losing. I don't care how bad the Cardinals are. And they're off. The Giants got to figure out, obviously, on their offensive line, right? So, like, going back to that, like, what the injury is one thing, but like, what do they do at guard? Do you think Azudu? Well,
I think they would consider, you know, he did not hesitate last year to bench Kenny Golladay. Not bench Kenny Golladay, but Kenny Golladay was his you know, his number one receiver on opening day. He played more snaps than anybody else last year. Didn't play particularly well. They won the game. Week two, Kenny Galladay kind of disappeared, and for the rest of the season kind of disappeared, you know, pretty much. And I think Austin Kleatro was another one who was a starter for week one. They looked at it, you know, and Dable said this yesterday, you know, we kind of look at that whether we win or lose. We evaluate everything that's going on. And last year after a win, he wasn't afraid to make changes in that regard. And that's the way it remained throughout the season. I mean, if you remember, Micah McFadden played all 17 games. I think he was one of two defensive players to play all 17 games. He might have been the only one because they sat the starters in the last game, obviously. And then when we got to the playoffs, they had brought in Jarrett Davis. They weren't afraid to put him in and make a change there in the playoffs. So it's, you know, not inconceivable that, hey, after one game, we're going to look at something else because we can't have what we had in game one and game two.
So let's assume Thomas is not playing. If Parrott can't play, I think they go with Azudu.
Yeah.
Okay, so we know that.
We don't know it for sure, but it's what. I guess they would have the option of trying to work McKeithen more at left tackle during the week if they, you know, if they felt like that was a better option. But I don't know. They obviously didn't feel that on Sunday.
And I don't think he's ever played in a regular season NFL game.
Two special team snaps Sunday were his debut.
There you go. And so I would think the likeliest scenario if Parrott and Thomas can't play is that Azudu is the left tackle and everything else remains the same. Let's say Parrott is able to play. He's the left tackle. What do they do at guard? Does Azudu play left guard and Bredesen move to right and Glowinski bench? What do they do?
I could see that being that scenario, yes, for sure. After the game that Glowinski had, and it was said, you know, said earlier, you know, it wasn't like they were enamored with what he did last year, which wasn't that bad, really. I mean, he was the starting right guard in every game for a team that went to the playoffs. So, you wonder. And, you know, obviously he's not a great player, but he graded out okay last year. I think he was in, like, among the top 30 guards in PFF grades last year. And you wonder if it messes with a guy's head a little bit. Like, you know, I thought I was doing okay, and then I came to training camp, and apparently they didn't think so. You know, you wonder if that messes with the guy's head a little bit.
Yeah. I think that's certainly possible.
But you have to be mentally tough enough to say, you know, especially in a game like this, to say, hey, you know what? I just got to prove it again.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's been through it. And, you know, he's been in the league for 9 years now. So we'll see how he responds. They need a response from him of some sort. So, yeah, I think that's probably what they wind up doing on the offensive line.
He goes on Jason Peters. He's only on a practice squad right now.
Who's that?
Jason Peters.
Yeah, they could scoop him up before Seattle puts him on their right. Seattle isn't that who signed him on their active roster?
I think he's still, yeah. And he's only like 64.
He's only 54.
Don't like that. How old is he now?
Jason Peters, by the way, is he's 41. He was born a few months before I was, so he's born early in 82. So there you go. One of the few, maybe the one of the handful or only player in the NFL who's older than I am right now. So
whose practice squad are you on?
Yeah, right. So Lael Collins available. He got released off the practice squad, I think, by the Bengals. Just got released off the PUP list. So I guess that means, I don't know if that means he's healthy. So there, I honestly don't know what that means there. So, you know, he's a name player, but yeah, he's 30. You're talking about it's not an ideal situation for what they could do with this offensive line. And I think we talked about where they have to get better defensively. One more thing offensively. So the other injuries coming out of the game where Graham Gano has some kind of leg injury. Obviously, you don't want to lose your kicker. We'll see what that means. But they didn't sign anybody, so maybe not a big deal there.
Yeah, I don't. As of right now, no, not a big deal. And you know, I'm just looking to see the practice squad. If that would be it, is there anybody on the practice squad right now that could be? Jalen Thomas is on the practice squad, so I guess that's a possibility as well. He's the only tackle on the practice squad.
Yeah, yeah. And they would probably elevate him as some kind of backup in that situation if they had to. The other one to watch injury-wise is Darren Waller, who popped up late in the week on Friday as a limited participant in practice with his hamstring injury. It's the same hamstring as last year, and he was very candid after the game. He did play, and he didn't, you know, he was able to get through the game. This is obviously something they're going to have to manage, as if they didn't know that already. But, you know, he was listed as questionable, limited on Friday. Now he's got a short week of two games coming up in the span of whatever Sunday to Thursday is, 4 days, five, whatever. And he said after the game it was a nerve issue, not a muscle issue in his hamstring, which I don't know enough about, like, how that works. But to me, it's like that's something that maybe could be more nagging. I don't know. But either way, that's kind of what he's dealing with in that same hamstring.
It's scary. He obviously didn't have the kind of debut everybody was anticipating. Not that that made him the Lone Ranger in this game. It's got to be a little worrisome that this happened as they're about ready to get into the season. And he's saying it's the same thing that bothered him last year. He's obviously vital to what they want to try to do. And, you know, again, if you're making a list of the players you don't want to lose, he's in the top five.
So that is something they'll have to manage against a Cardinal defense that, you know, Sam Howell did not have a great game. They did a pretty good job against him. But, you know, you're talking about a little bit different than a more established quarterback like Daniel Jones. Cardinals lost the game 20-16. Dobbs was what, you know, the bottom line is the Giants are not giving up losing 40-0 with the Cardinals. And I think they're probably not beating the Cardinals 40-0 either, quite frankly, or even close to it. I think this will be a closer game than people expect. We'll get to our pick later on. But I think there's a lot of concerns, not just with how this team performed. They didn't look, I think we're drilling down on a lot of these like depth chart things, but like very broadly, they didn't look better to ready to play. They didn't look ready to play. So, I mean, is that in your mind on Brian Daboll?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, I do go back to the I mean, it was two really freaky plays. You know, the first interception is obviously not Daniel Jones' fault. He hits Barkley and he gets a big hit, and it becomes a touchdown. The field goal, and if you go back and look at the field goal, it actually looks like that is Josh Azudu's fault, because, you know, I'm pretty sure they always teach you to block inside out on if you're blocking a field goal, and he appeared to do it opposite, like went after the guy on the outside and allowed Thomas to come inside and block the field goal.
Good point.
I'm sorry, I lost a train of thought there for a second. We're talking about
with all the things that went wrong. I mean, how much?
Tennessee's
been coaching, right?
You were asking me about Daboll and how much Daboll to blame. Yeah, and I just think those three plays are so vital to this. But then you just go back, and the way they responded to adversity was just not good, and that's always a reflection on the coach. You know, you're supposed to keep your composure, you know, and this especially happens almost all the time on the road, especially in a big game, and it's going to certainly happen in San Francisco. You have to stem the tide at the start of a game on the road, because you know, there's the emotion for a home team. It's just, it's always there. The adrenaline there is always more for the home team. I just watched those types of games so many times. And in this game, the Giants had all that adrenaline. It went away, and then they just never recovered from it. And Daboll actually kind of alluded to this on Monday, saying, you know, it was my job to, like, kind of figure out a way to get us to stop that, to settle down and stop that. And I didn't do it. And he's right. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to say, no, this wasn't your fault, Brian Daboll, because, you know, you're the head coach, 40-0. It's your name that goes on that record.
And owning it is one thing, fixing it is another. We had a good conversation earlier when we were talking about maybe some of the lessons that Brian Daboll has learned from, not just about like thriving from Nick Saban and Bill Belichick, and Bill, we'll mention Belichick in particular here in a moment, but how to handle a situation like this. So what did you kind of, and you'll write about this later in the week, but like just kind of give people a little bit of a taste of what exactly that it is.
Daboll certainly had some coaching lessons in how to deal with, you know, things look grim. How do you recover from this? And one of my favorite examples was the 2003 Patriots, who weren't yet the dynasty Patriots. They had won one Super Bowl the following year. They didn't go to the playoffs. And then, you know, this is now Belichick's fourth year, and it starts with him cutting Lawyer Malloy a week before the season, because Lawyer Malloy, who had 4 years left on his contract, wouldn't take a pay cut. And it really angered the players. Apparently, I read more about it later. I didn't really get into this. I'm not going to get too much in the story itself. But Tom Jackson, before their second game against the Eagles, that on that Sunday show, you know, the Sunday pregame show, said the Patriots hate their coach. And apparently Belichick for years wouldn't speak to Tom Jackson about that. But he basically said they hate their coach. And that was a popular sentiment that the Patriots were turning on their coach. And then the Patriots proceeded to go out, beat the Eagles 31 to 10. It wasn't that close. I was at the game. And then they proceeded to go 14-2. And win the Super Bowl against the Panthers, and then win another Super Bowl the next year. And at that point, they were a dynasty. And Belichick continued to do those types of things throughout the year, but also continued, you know, anytime it looked really bad for the Patriots, I think, I forget exactly what year it was, but I think they went on to win the Super Bowl after losing by like early season. I think it was the year that Brady was suspended for the four games. They lost 41-17 to the Chiefs, and that game might have been in New England. I'm not sure, but they rebounded from that. So, you know, he watched all of that all those years. He also watched Nick Saban lose the Iron Bowl in the only year he's at Alabama, and then turn around and win a national championship a month later by beating Clemson and Georgia in back-to-back games, and benching the quarterback, although there's some people, I guess, think that Daboll was responsible. And, you know, those are what great coaches, legendary coaches do. They, the worst of times, they figure out how to get past them and make them footnotes in a season. The one thing I will say is that Daboll had I'm not sure it was this big a moment, but it was a pretty big moment last year when they started 7-2 and then went 0-3-1 with the last of those four games being a route that looked very similar to Sunday night's route against the Eagles at home. They got crushed and had to go to play the Commanders the following week, who had a bye and who had played the Giants in their previous game and tied them. I wasn't at the game, but I think, you know, looking at it, it looked like the Commanders might've outplayed the Giants in that 20-20 game at home. But the Giants went down there and won their biggest game of the year to set up their getting into the playoffs 2 weeks later. So that was an indication that he can handle these types of things, but now he's got another one in front of him where, hey, what are you going to show us now?
For sure. And if they had missed the playoffs last year after a 7-2 start, 6-1 and 7-2 start, everyone would have been crushing him for putting a Dory Jackson back on a punt return against the Lions, and they lost that game. That was the first four straight games that they did not win. They had three losses and a tie. So he did respond to adversity. He's seen two of his great mentors respond to adversity, and now it's about an early response to adversity for a team that does not have a lot of wiggle room. I mean, we talked about it going into this game, an early tipping point game because of the way the schedule unfolds, because if they beat the Cowboys, there's a possibility that they start 2-0. Maybe that gives them wiggle room to lose in San Francisco 2-1. They're 2-1 going into the long break before the Seattle game Monday night. And then you got at Miami, at Buffalo, weeks 5 and 6. Now they're staring down the possibility of being 1-2 going into Seattle, into the Seattle game at home on Monday night, October the 2nd, with Miami and Buffalo trips looming after that. I'm not going to say they couldn't afford to lose to the Cowboys, but it just loomed as an early tipping point game. They didn't win it, and now they have to try to dig out of it.
I will say they can't afford to lose to the Cardinals.
That is for sure. Before we get into the pick of this one, I just want to, like, big picture wise, the Giants can't, you know, just continue to struggle to beat the Eagles and the Cowboys. Just continue to not beat the Eagles and the Cowboys. Let's be honest, they're not winning against them. And so Dable is now what, 0-6, including the playoffs against the Eagles and the Cowboys. And we all know about the grim numbers going back even more years against both of those teams. But so that game on Sunday, everyone's going to look at it and say, and rightfully so, this team is not close to being a legit contender. Maybe they're a team that's a nice team that's going to maybe win one playoff game like they did. They're not ready to take the next step. And Darren Waller said for the game, even though he wasn't here last year, we've given people the ammo to say that until we prove them otherwise. Where do you fall on what this means big picture for the Giants?
Yeah, not good. Not good at all. I really felt like this was an improved team. I did feel this too. Like, I felt that it was I still think it's a better roster this year than it was last year.
Oh yeah.
But as I wrote in the prediction column, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to have a better record because the schedule's tougher. We're seeing that now. There's just no way you can say, hey, oh yeah, they're closing ground on the Cowboys. Their defense really stood out. Neither side of the ball did anything. Special teams had the biggest blunder of the game that triggered the whole snowball down the hill. There's no reason right now to say, hey, they've made up ground on those teams. And there won't be until they can beat one of them. That's the next time you can say it. When they beat either the Eagles or Cowboys, you say, hey, you know what? It's all going in the right direction now.
And they do not play either of those teams against week 10 in Dallas, November the 12th, and then week 16 and 18 against the Eagles.
Right. And they because they went 1-5-1 in the division last year. 1-5-1. One four and one in division. And then 1-5-1 against division teams after the playoff loss to the Eagles. But because they did that, they had to make hay against other teams, which they did, you know. So now you're playing the three straight NFC West teams. And I'm not sure that's a great thing because the NFC West doesn't stink. Although Seattle had a stinker on opening day too, much like the Giants. When you don't beat your own division, you better be beating up the rest of the rest of the NFC and AFC.
Yeah. Yeah, and then four straight really tough games after this Cardinal game, San Francisco, Seattle, Miami, Buffalo, three of those are on the road. We know, this is just a gauntlet coming up. And then they play the Commanders at home, and then they get the Jets. But so who knows where this Giant team is going to be, like, in week 8, let alone week 10, when you talk about Jets in week 8 at the Cowboys in week 10. So
right. I'm going to go back to your question for a second about, you know, what's this big picture thing here? And you mentioned the Commanders, and you kind of like go over, oh, well, and then just the Commanders at home. But if you really think about big picture and the Giants last year, they were a lot closer to the Commanders than they were to the Eagles or Cowboys. And that still may be the case.
This is an enormous stretch ahead, and I think we're going to know a lot more about this team by, say, on the morning of October the 16th, after they play their sixth game at the Bills the night before on Sunday night. how this team responded, because it could be in a pretty significant hole at that point, given the gauntlet ahead and given the injuries on their line and how they're going to have to try to dig out of this. Granted, just one game, it certainly feels like more adversity than that, but I think it should because of what's ahead and the schedule. And obviously the Giants are not concerning themselves with the big picture of like legit contender and all that. So, but bottom line is they have to take care of answering that question.
You know, another question, Darryl, I think is that maybe just got overshadowed because just of the whole ugliness, but how concerned should we be about Daniel Jones after that game? You know, giving people reason to, be optimistic about what he was and can be. That was not a good performance by him Sunday night at all.
Just looking up the box score and a video popped up, but 15 to 28, 104, no touchdowns, two picks, a 32-4 quarterback rating. Just bad. I mean, I know the Saquon Barkley pick, or the drop, it was a drop by Barkley, and so that wasn't Jones's fault.
Right.
But in terms of the other things, he did not do pretty much anything well. That was actually, I don't know how this got lost in the shuffle. This is the worst quarterback rating of his career. Second worst was in his rookie year, 35-2 against the Patriots in New England. They lost that game 35-14. The worst quarterback rating of his career. Even worse than, and he had a 53-8 in Philadelphia in the divisional round loss. And granted, last year he had a 153-3 against Houston. So we know he has it in him, but in by at least one measure, coming off the worst game of his career, short week, and has got to go against a hungry Cardinals team, but certainly a game that everyone's looking at and saying, like, got to win, even if it gives them a little wiggle room. If they don't win, I think if 1-2 start is not the end of the world. But if they go 0-2, then they're going into San Francisco, and no one's going to be talking about how there's an opportunity for the Giants to win and prove themselves to be legit. Like, so if they beat the Cowboys and beat the Cardinals, everyone's looking at that game saying, wow, this is another measuring stick. Giants can prove they're like ready to take the next step. And I think, there are games before they play the Cowboys and Eagles again where they can prove that they're like a legit contender. But now that everything kind of flips. Either it becomes a desperation game on Thursday night in San Francisco against a super talented and tough opponent if they lose Sunday. And I think it's obviously still important even if they win, because 1-2, you don't want to start 1-2. It's not the end of the world. You can certainly overcome that, but 0-3 would be absolutely disastrous considering the schedule ahead. So that is a prove it game in some ways in week three next Thursday night. And for Jones going against that 49er defense, I mean, man, if the Cowboys have a really good defense, obviously, but like 32-4, what is that going to look like, his rating, if he plays like that and the line plays like that when coming out of that game in suburban San Jose?
The sky will be falling. The sky will be falling over the entire big, large area that Giants fans inhabit in the North Jersey, New York, Long Island, Connecticut, however, wherever you want to go, people are going to be, they might be lining up on the GW Bridge.
We said it all along, like, this schedule, even though the roster is better, the schedule is so much harder, and the way the schedule falls is really hard. 7 of the first 11 on the road, I've been saying it, 6 of the first 10, 7 of the first 11 on the road. This, it lends itself to a regression in terms of the results, in terms of the results, which is what matters. So, now, again, one loss, it was a terrible loss. You mentioned worst home loss in 80 years, but it's still one loss, but it just feels like so much more. And I think a lot of Giants fans are wondering, like, can they answer and can they avoid this regression? And so since we covered pretty much everything, you wanted to do a pick now?
Let's do a pick. I am going so much of this I wish we could wait until find out whether Andrew Thomas is going to play or not.
Yeah, mine may change by the end of the week, but we'll just
But we're not going to know till Friday. And I'm just going to, even if he doesn't play, I'm going to say that the Giants figure out a way to win this game. Let's say 23-19. I'm going to say their defense, 23-17. I'm going to say their defense really stands up and plays a much better game to win, to help the win this one. Maybe get a turnover, a short field, and get some touchdowns that way.
Yeah, this will not be a high scoring game. It doesn't look like Andrew Thomas is going to play, and I'm just assuming here when I'm doing this that he's not going to play. I'll say 24-14 for the Giants. The Cardinals are really limited offensively, and I think the Giants defense should be able to do their part, and they have to do their part if Andrew Thomas is not in there. Now, it's not like you're losing your quarterback, but it's a pretty big loss. So I think that'll limit what the Giants are able to do offensively. I think it won't matter necessarily because of how limited the Cardinals are, and I think the Giants defense answers the bell. 24-14 Giants, they get back to 1-1. I don't see it going well for them in week 3 in San Francisco, but we will get to that next week. So, anything else to add from your end here as we digest what was two crazy, crazy days in New York football?
I think that's it. I think we covered it all. We covered a little Jets there at the beginning. We covered lots of Giants, and now we get to week 2, see what happens here.
We will have a little more on the injuries tomorrow, so certainly a lot more because they'll put the injury report out. We'll know where things stand a little bit in terms of practice participation and have a bit of an eye toward the game. I think by Thursday we'll have a better feel for who will play. Again, I don't think Andrew Thomas plays, but as usual, be sure to check us out on nj.com/Giants and like, rate, review, subscribe here on all your favorite podcasting platforms. And we appreciate everybody reading. I know it was probably not fun to read a lot of the coverage coming out of Sunday night, but hopefully you learned something. Hopefully you saw a Giant team and got the pulse of a team that is trying to figure this out. And let's see if they do. So we'll talk to you guys probably around this time next week, or if not, maybe Monday coming out of that game as we look ahead to the San Francisco game and a huge week out west coming up for the Giants, who will stay out there in Arizona practice before going to San Francisco, well, suburban San Jose. We'll catch up with you guys next week. Everyone enjoy the rest of your week and enjoy the game on Sunday.